Welcome to the X-Cast, X-Files Podwatch, episode 96, covering Trust No One and John Doe. I'm your host, Darren Mooney, and with me is TV editor at The Digital Fix, novelist and screenwriter, Baz Greenland. How are you, Baz?
I'm good, thank you.
It has been forever since we talked to each other.
A whole day, yes.
It has been a whole day. To be honest, when you're watching ninth season episodes, sometimes that can feel like a very long time. But with that in mind, then, we'll sort of jump right in, because I imagine we might have a lot of things to say about these two episodes. So, Trust Number One. I believe I am pronouncing this correctly. How is Trust No One for you?
Trust No One is the best mythology episode of season 9.
I do not disagree with that.
In my opinion. But season 9 mythology is absolutely terrible. So it's got some bits in it that I kind of like. It's not a great episode. There's some good tension. It's a bit good most of tension in it, certainly, but it's very, very trite as well. It's a weird one. But for me, I kind of felt that with all the other mythology episodes, I went from being bored at my mind to physically hating it. This one, I wasn't bored and I didn't hate it completely. So in that mind, it's kind of the better one.
I feel like somewhere Chris Carter is printing off your quotes so we can pin it to a wall.
And yes,
like,
somewhere. Yeah,
this is what this has accomplished. Baz did not want to gouge out his eyes while watching parts of this. Yeah, well, let's talk about how... let's talk about the aspects of this, which are... Some of them are interesting, some of them are terrible. A lot of them are very revealing of the flaws with Season 9, I think. Like, I think that Trust No One is in many ways a microcosm of the problems with Season 9. We've talked about it, and I'm fairly sure every other person covering the ninth season on this podwatch has talked about it. But, the ninth season is basically 20 episodes of that joke from The Simpsons where Homer's voicing the character Poochie and suggests that when Poochie is not on screen, every other character should be asking, where's Poochie? Except Poochie is David Duchovny, and David Duchovny does not want anything to do with the show
exactly.
At this moment in time.
Yeah, this whole episode is one big, is he coming back? No,
he's not. But it's also so, there's something really disconcerting about the ninth season of The X-Files, because it feels like a love letter written to, somebody who's basically already decided that you are out of their life. It's like there's really pining sort of purple prose sort of, please come back, we love you, we can make things right, we can make this work, I believe we can. And it's just, it's kind of really disheartening to watch because the writers use Gillian Anderson, who actually is stuck around, because Gillian Anderson, when she negotiated her pay rise at the start of the eighth season, part of the condition was that she stayed on for the ninth. She stuck around on the ninth season, basically, and the writers are using her as a conduit to Mulder. And it happens repeatedly. It happens, obviously, in the first two episodes where Lucy Lawless shows up and she's like, hey, Doggett, remember we used to serve together? And he's like, yeah, can you get me to Scully? And he's like, okay. And then she gets to Scully and he's like, can you get me to Mulder? And it's just really, really, really frustrating. And here it's even more direct. It's like the mustached man played by Mr. 1013 in his last 1013 appearance, Terry O'Quinn, is basically using Scully as a proxy to get to Mulder. It's like the most important character in the show isn't on the show.
Yes.
And it's really frustrating.
It's basically the first really obvious sign that they don't want to make, they do not want to make the show Doggett and Reyes investigate the X-Files. You saw that in Nothing Important Happened Today, part 1 and 2. But at least they were saying a little bit, particularly for Doggett to do here, they're basically... They literally Doggett and Reyes are sat in a car outside Sky's apartment while interesting stuff happens inside. They are literally sat there waiting, ready for their screen time. And there's no interest in doing anything with Doggett and Reyes, which is really frustrating for two reasons. One, because that they make it all about Mulder even though he's not coming back. And actually, the whole thing with Super Soldiers, Doggett was a sort of Marine himself. He's supposedly former friend and deep throat type character. He's a super soldier. You know, he's got another old colleague who's a super soldier. It may be good. There's so much going on that could give Doggett a really good meaty role here, but they don't do anything with that. They just literally plunk him aside and go, okay, want to get to Mulder. And that's what's really frustrating.
There's a really great moment at the climax of this episode that sums up the ninth season for me perfectly. It's the moment where Mulder's, in inverted commas, David Duchovny's stunt double, is running towards the quarry and Doggett is running after him. He shouts, Mulder! Mulder! And Mulder barely glances back at him before keeping going. And it's just like, this is John Doggett's lot in life. it's to be basically ghosted by Mulder's stunt double. It's really disheartening, and it's really disheartening because it happens to Scully. Like, you mentioned when we were talking yesterday about 4D, that, like, a lot of what happens with Gillian Anderson in the Four Seasons is, my baby. This is really the first time that that happens, where it's, like, basically Scully's primary interest in the plot is as a nexus point between Mulder and William. She has no real agency of her own, and it's really frustrating because she's really, really great.
Yeah. Well, she's an Emmy Award-winning actress. She was always a better actress in X-Files. Now, David Duchovny did certainly knock it out of the park when he wanted to, but consistently, Gillian Anderson was by far the best actor, say, on the show, and yet she does absolutely sod all on this show. This is the first time they kind of give her anything to do, and again, it's when they actually give her stuff to do, like this, and the mid-season two part, it's all about William and the kind of mystique around Mulder. It's not for her. It's nothing about her itself.
And Carter then gives her this horrible, overwrought purple prose, like, you know, yours sincerely, Dana. Like, who signs their emails with an ellipsis?
Exactly. And this is the thing. I assume that whole scene when she's reading his words and my hands are trembling as I write back to you, it's supposed to be heartfelt. But the idea, you saw Mulder and Scully at the end of season 8, and he still quit at the end when they're there with the baby. They wouldn't be talking like that, and I don't think Scully would talk like that. So why do they make her this kind of, oh, she's like loved up, lost woman who has no purpose in life? And that's basically what it is.
It's basically like the prose or the voiceovers in Redux, but without any of the charm or insight. It's just... It's like somebody's basically transcribed. You know those old sort of 18th century novels that are written in letters back and forth between characters of purple prose, which I think is a very Carter thing to do. But it's just horrible in this. It doesn't work at all.
Don't go, I think she still gives a good performance. I think she carries it in those scenes. The one positive that in her facial performance, you get that sense of kind of loss in Gillian Anderson. But that's because Gillian Anderson is a great actress. I think the actual words themselves, though, are just incredibly trite. And between that and the pre-tart sequence with the use of Tchaikovsky's music as well, it's all so just trite and so... It's all about...
Manipulative.
Mulder and Scully, weren't they wonderful? No, it's a Dogger and Reyes show. Forget Dogger and Reyes. It's all about Mulder and Scully again.
And one of them isn't even in the show.
I know. Okay, I'm going to be more positive. What I do like about the episode, there are two things I like about the episode, which I think is probably the better mythology. It is quite, I think it's certainly some momentum in it, particularly the scene when Scully is ordered to go driving different cars and whizzing around, you know, to try and lose the authorities that may be tracking her. And there's even the scene at the train station with the shooting, there's a certain amount, I think it's a certain amount of tension there, which does kind of save the episode a bit.
But it's so awful. You have that opening, like the teaser shot where the guy's lying on the ground and his head's in shadow.
Could it be Mulder?
And you're meant to think, oh my God, is that Mulder? And it's like, no.
That bit is rubbish. But I still think there's a nice kind of bit of... I thought there was some tension there. Not on is Mulder coming back, because he obviously wasn't coming back. But I just think the kind of... There's a threat. I think it's really down to... You mentioned Terry O'Quinn. I think he's his third role in the show, but I think he's good, as he was in Millennium as well. I think he's a good role here, and I think there's that sense of, is he this kind of ally? Is he the threat? And I kind of like that with his character, but he doesn't really play its cards until the end when it really reveals that he is a super soldier. Why he's trying to get Mulder to kill him doesn't make any sense at all.
Well, it's because you find out there's some sort of weird prophecy and providence.
Oh, yeah,
and providence.
I try and blank out that two-parter completely, but yeah, I think he himself is a good, quite a good character in itself. And I also, you know, and I like through him, this whole sense of the NSA watching you, it's something that kind of really came out of, obviously this is just after 9/11, as you mentioned when we talked about yesterday, and there's kind of there's all that raw tension about, you know, are we safe, and the idea of people watching you and abusing that use of security. And it goes all the way through to smaller shows like Person of Interest, which was always a great show, and they really did that well. And it's kind of started here, because I think the one good thing about The X-Files was that it kind of influenced so much TV, but by the end, it actually kind of started to feel tired. This was I felt for me, there was a little element of that kind of trying to do something with the kind of post 9/11 landscape. Whether it's coincidental, I don't know, but
there definitely was. And I think that one of the more interesting aspects of the ninth season mythology, which, to be clear, is a car crash, but one of the more interesting aspects of it is the way that you see Carter trying to play with the 9/11 stuff. And there's a sense that, like, immediately after 9/11, you lose a sense of it now in the sense that we're all more skeptical. But after 9/11, there was this huge patriotic fervor. The government's going to do what the government's going to do. Like, for example, the Patriot Act, for example, was introduced by Joe Biden, you know, lovable Uncle Joe Biden. But you have this sort of sense that Carter was already skeptical about that. Like, you have this idea of, like, when Scully demands to know who the mustache man is, his response is, "I am the future." You know, and there's the point where when they meet in the middle of nowhere and he says, "There is no middle of nowhere anymore." And this idea, and it even plays into what I was talking about with when we were talking about 4D and alternate dimensions, this idea of, like, the world as viewed through a screen. Like, the mustache man claims he knows Scully, even though he hasn't seen her or met her in person until that scene with the car, because he's watched her through a screen all these years. There's a sense of mediated reality which recurs throughout the ninth season as a whole, the sense of, like, how you process the world, and you process it now through screens, whether those are television screens or computer screens, or in the future for the show, phone screens. Like, I really like that aspect of it, but otherwise it's just a mess of it. And the bit at the end where he's lured into the quarry and he sort of shakes and he does, like, Superman into the side of a mountain, it's just awful. It's really just awful television.
You want to be positive? It sets up the end game. It sets up how to resolve the Super Soldier plot.
That's the best we have.
Yeah, there you go.
Basically, Superman. Yeah, is what we're doing with this thing. And because one of the things I like about the ninth season is it potentially has this very comic booky attitude to it, to the point where, like, nothing important happens. Say part one has a really nice color scheme to it, but it's never followed up or developed, and it just becomes this weight around the show's neck. But I think we sort of talked maybe a bit too much about Trust No One. So with that in mind, what we might do is we might segue gently into talking about the second episode we're going to talk about today, which is John Doe. So, Baz, John Doe.
Yes, John Doe is probably the best episode of season 9. Yes, it's a great episode, and it's a really good. We've been talking so much about poor Doggett, you know, basically hospitalized, beaten, trapped, forced at his own show. This is a really, really good Doggett episode. I don't think it's not an episode that David Duchovny could have done as well as Doggett either.
No, and not only is it a great Doggett episode, which we'll probably come back to because it's a great performance by Robert Patrick, it's also a really good Reyes episode in that it's an episode which uses Reyes very specifically. So it's like she grew up in Mexico. She speaks Spanish. Like, she understands the area. She has some local knowledge. She gets to interact with that great scene with the drug dealer where she's like, "Pillar of the community, does anybody except mob lawyers use that?" Or the bit where she accuses him of being a drug dealer and the lawyer is like, "Please stop speaking Spanish." But it's a really good episode that uses both leads really, really spectacularly well. And, like, if every episode of season 9, or I don't even care, not every episode, if, like, 1 in 4 episodes of season 9 had been this well constructed, I would be totally on board with, like, a Doggett Reyes. Forget about Mulder and Scully. They're in the past. Maybe they'll come back for the 20th anniversary. This is, I'm okay with this. I am down with this.
And to be honest, when I watched season 9 again recently, I thought it was quite a shame. I would have absolutely watched the season 10. I would happily. Okay, Scully had finally gone off with Mulder and had been properly had a season 10 with Doggett and Reyes. They proved themselves. I think, you know, there's always talk of, you know, can there be a spin off to the X Files? Could Einstein and Miller be a spin off? Absolutely no way in hell. They're terrible. But I think Doggett and Reyes was it. They did it. And this was frustrating. And people thought, oh, it went really bad at the end. If you watch episodes like this and 4D and what could a Doggett Reyes show could have been, you watch 4D, you watch John Doe, you watch Hellbound and Audra Pawley. You've got it. It's their four good episodes that absolutely prove they could be good. Would it have been as good? Would it have been quite as good as the early X-Files? Probably not. But I could have seen 2 or 3 seasons with them. You know, it would absolutely have worked.
And I think you could have got in those two or three seasons, you would have got 1 or 2 like 5-star episodes a season, which I think is, you know, it's not the batting average the show had at its height anywhere near it, but it's great for a primetime network show. And it's really, really good. And it feels like everything in this episode is earned for the pair of them. Like, because this is paying off, like, obviously the death of Doggett's son, for example, the death of Luke Doggett. But it's kind of, and the idea that Reyes goes to Mexico alone to retrieve him as well. And it's just got, and it's we should mention as well, it's written by Vince Gilligan, it's directed by Michelle MacLaren. In many ways, it feels like a pilot for Breaking Bad in terms of aesthetic, like with the film grain and the sort of the washed out gold color scheme. But it has this feel and this texture that is radically different from anything that The X-Files has done. Because, I mean, when it first moved to California, it was very bright and very sunny. And then in the 8th season, they made a conscious choice to make it darker, which I think was very clever, and I think they did very well. But one of the things I like about John Doe is John Doe feels gritty and unpleasant, and it does feel like a horror show, but it doesn't feel like a horror show in a way that's like just trying to recapture old glories. It's like, no, this is actually something that is really, really uncomfortable and really uncanny, but it's something that, like, I've never seen a Mulder and Scully episode that looks like this.
No,
which I really, really like about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that kind of gritty grain to the visuals of it all, and the kind of that glaring harsh sun, and it's that sense of danger in that kind of bright sunshine. I think that's kind of what the whole town's about. It might be right bright and sunny, but it's very run down, it's very rustic, very dangerous, and Doggett is basically in hell, even though it's not this dark, fiery place that you might imagine it to be. You know, it's very good, but it absolutely works. It's shot brilliantly.
And directed fantastic. It's Michelle MacLaren's first episode, I believe, of television. And she sort of, like, she went on to do, obviously she did Breaking Bad, but she also did, like, Game of Thrones and stuff like that. And it's just, it's astounding. Like, The X-Files doesn't get enough credit. Like, the writers on The X-Files were fantastic. Hugely influential, went on to create countless television shows and to have, like, these huge footprints across popular culture in terms of, like, 24, in terms of Homeland, in terms of Breaking Bad, in terms of Better Call Saul. But, like, the directors who worked on The X-Files were also equally sort of, like, they pushed the boundaries of what you could do on a weekly television show. And obviously, when you say that, people think of, like, Rob Bowman, who went on to work on Castle, but they think of, like, David Nutter, who went to work on like, stuff like Game of Thrones, or even, like, obviously Kim Manners, who worked on Better Call Saul. Didn't work on Better Call Saul, apologies. He worked on Breaking Bad. But, like, Michelle MacLaren is like, one of the great examples of how, even in its 9th season, the show was still giving people, with a strong visual sense, the freedom, like, to realise that. Like, it's a show that, like, no other show with a fixed visual style could have done an episode that looked as good as this. And certainly not with a first-time director working on it. And it's just, it's astounding. It's amazing. It's just so rich and so exciting. And I watched it again. I watched it last night. And I loved it the first time I watched the 9th season. I've loved it every time I watched the 9th season. It's like, every time I go into the 9th season, I get through the bad stuff at the start of the season because I know this is waiting for me. And then I just have to power through the rest of it. But this is beautiful. This is a fantastic piece of work.
Mm. I think this is close. I mean, I think this is basically the closest classic, I think, as I don't think it's as good as the really, really big X-File classics for me, but it's definitely as close to classic in that kind of last couple of years as it did, I think.
I mean, I'd probably go with, like, This Is Not Happening from season 8, and maybe Roadrunners as well.
Yeah, I think season 8 is much stronger and has a lot of good stuff. Season 9, certainly. I mean, we talk about, season 9 varies from gouging at your eyeballs to, it's not bad, but this is one of those where you say, yeah, this is great. This is really great television.
It is, and I mean, it also even has that sort of core X-Files idea of, like, memory to it. Like, it's got this sense of, like, Doggett having his memory stolen from him, and, like, one of the big themes of the X-Files is this idea of cultural memory. So, like, you expose the past. Mulder discovers the truth by exposing all these shameful secrets that have happened, by reminding people, like, of the Second World War, of the Holocaust, of these things that were done in their name, the Tunguski experiments, the cover-ups, the radiation experiments that those conducted on prisoners and stuff like that. And, like, one of the big themes of the X-Files is that institutional memory is what's necessary to protect us. But, like, I like that, like, in some ways John Doe is a more personal story. It's like memory is a personal thread of continuity for Doggett. Like, and there's a great scene at the end where the guy who has taken his memory, who's stolen his sort of everything from him, asks, you know, your life, I saw your life, it had so much pain, why would you possibly want that back? And Doggett just looks at him and goes, and this is a beautiful moment, it's a beautiful moment for Robert Patrick, it's a beautiful moment for the show, he just says, because it's mine. And it's just such a powerful, evocative sort of statement. And I think it's a quintessentially X-Files moment. It's the idea that even if the past is horrible, and even if it's full of trauma, and even if horrible things have happened, because let's face it, on this show, if you're a character on this show, your memory is going to be full of horrible things happening. But it's just such a powerful statement of how that's important regardless, how you mustn't let go of that, how the truth, in some ways, like, this is Doggett reclaiming his own truth, which is a more personal truth than, like, Mulder was looking for, although you could argue Samantha or whatever, but this is, like, Doggett basically saying, look, my pain is my own, my life is my own, and it's just this beautiful sort of simple, really simple story, and it's told so well with such great performances, such a solid script and such fantastic direction. It is... For me, it's pretty close to perfect. And this is as happy as I'm going to feel talking about the ninth season. So is there anything else sort of jumping out at you about it that you'd like to talk about?
Well, I mean, just generally, about Rob Patrick's performance as Doggett. He was, it's moments like that line, because it's mine. It's like the moments where he finally encounters Res, and then the memories of his son's death come flooding back. It's like, he's such a good actor, and it really does remind how central he was in those final couple of years of The X-Files. It's just great to really see Doggett being absolutely awesome, even when he's trapped in hell, he doesn't know who he is, he's still such a great character.
He is. I love how resourceful he is as well. Like the bit where he rings up the foreign service office, and he's basically like, "Well, we found a body. He's whacked up. He's no idea who he is. He's wearing a tattoo. He's about my height, my eye color, my voice. Anything you can do would help." Like, it's such a clever, like, he's lost, but he's not, like, even with no sense of who he is, he's still resourceful. And it feels like Doggett never got to be that resourceful in the ninth season, where his job was primarily to drive Scully back and forth, or his job was primarily to deliver exposition, or to wait in a car outside a window, as you said, which he does more than once in the ninth season. I feel like this is the Doggett episode that the characters deserve. And I don't think he gets a matching episode. I think Release is very good, but I think it's very rushed. It's very clearly we're wrapping up the season.
It's kind of the companion, because this really brings back his Samantha story, on which is his son Luke, and then you kind of deal with the resolution, which has some great stuff in it, but it's not as well executed in Release. I think if nothing else, if I say watch a Doggett episode of The X-Files, this is the one to watch. There's a lot of fantastic stuff in season 8, definitely, but this is the one really he's really kind of at the heart of it, and as you said as well, Reyes is great. And episodes like this, when you see Reyes, just how resourceful, how great and passionate she is, that when you think about what they do with her in season 10, it makes my blood boil, because actually they were making a really good character as well, and what they did was kind of unforgivable.
It really, really was. All right, well, with that in mind, and on that cheerful note, I think it's time to sort of bid farewell. Baz, it has been an absolute pleasure, because we've done a number of episodes together. I think this is our last one.
It is, unfortunately,
as the show approaches. Where can we find you online?
Okay, so at Twitter, I'm at Baz Greenland. Also got a Facebook page, Baz Greenland Writer, and you can follow me at The Digital Fix.
Perfect. You can find me, I'm at Darren Mooney, at Darren_Mooney. You can find me at The 250, which is a podcast. It's available on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever good podcasts are sold. Also on the Black Hole Podcast Media Network. You can follow The Xcast at The X_Cast. You can also find us on Facebook and join us on the group, The Xcast X-Files Podcast Fan Group. You can Google us, you'll find us there. Tweet us, we're happy to talk about X-Files. Tomorrow, we will be taking a look at Hellbound and Providence. I'll be back with that. But take it easy, and until next time, trust no one.